This is from the archive from our friend and comrade Todd Sloan. And Todd, who was a professor emeritus of counseling and psychology in the grad school at Lewis and Clark College, he died this past December 17th, 2018. We do miss him and feel fortunate to have an archive of his work on KBOO. Many, many contributions. I do encourage listeners to look him up and on the website and see what's out there. He really did speak to his commitment to developing systems to support activists and change agents in grassroots ecological and social justice organizations. And the segment we present to you now is right in that vein, the importance of historical memory for social movements. He interviewed in October 12, 2015, Sandy Polishek, who's also with 350 PDX, an oral historian and longtime activist. And we'll turn to that recording now.
Welcome, Sandy. Today we're going to be talking about activism in general, and especially in your role as an oral historian, looking at various past activism and documenting that for future generations. We're talking some about the importance of memory and reflection on where we've been as well as where we're going. So could you tell us first just sort of what has been your trajectory as an activist over the years, the kinds of things you've been involved in, your motivations for that?
Well, I got involved probably the first thing really deeply was during the Vietnam War, but seems like everybody who was of age then was involved in the Vietnam War, and it was a very exciting time.
What kind of roles did you play back then?
I was in an organization called the Society for New Action Politics, SNAP, but I ended up mainly working with draft counseling for men who didn't want to be drafted, didn't want to go, an alternative to going to Canada or going to jail, although a lot of people did choose those as well. But before the war was even over, I got pulled into the women's movement and was very, very involved there, doing a lot of consciousness-raising groups, speaking. It was a very exciting time.
And where were you then?
I was here.
In Portland.
I was here. I came to Portland in 1966. Mm-hmm. And, well, I got involved with KBOO. Which I definitely consider activism. But I also got involved with Jewish groups working for peace and justice, first in the early 80s with New Jewish Agenda, and then quite recently, in the last 10 years or so, with Brit Zedek V'Shalom, which then turned into J Street, which is still active, but I've moved on to climate work. And very devoted to that. I think it's the issue of our time.
So at some point you started doing oral histories in relation to
movement. Yes. In about 1980, I got involved with a group called the Northwest Women's History Project. I really got involved with them because I was at KBOO and I wanted to get more interviewing skills. And they were starting to do interviews with women who had worked in the shipyards during World War II, doing, quote, men's work, unquote. And I got totally hooked. And of the women in that, I and one other person who was getting her PhD in history are the two that continued to do oral history afterwards. So we produced what's now a DVD called Good Work, Sister. It chronicles the women that worked in the five shipyards during the war, World War II, in this area. Then I went on to interview mostly radical older women. And out of that, one of those interviews with Julia Rutila turned into a book, Sticking to the Union, which is an oral history-based biography. But I've done other oral histories. I've done a couple with women who were in Spain during the Spanish Civil War. And I did one with a woman who was a breast cancer activist. And I've taught oral history. So it's really made me appreciate what we have to learn from the past.
I know it's hard probably to generalize about what you learn from looking back and hearing stories about what happened in past activism and struggle. But is there something especially that you personally have gained from that that inspires your activism from hearing the stories of others and dimensions that come out as you do that?
One of the things that oral historians say is that every time someone dies, it's like a library burning down. So there's this great desire to preserve for the future. I've seen oral history books that are based on other people's oral histories, people who've gathered the interview and done nothing more than archive it, and someone else comes along and it's useful to them, either documenting that person or documenting a subject. So there's that just desire to archive. In one sense, everyone needs to reinvent the wheel for themselves. In another sense, we would never make any progress if that's where, if we start, all start from zero. So we start, whether it's in science or in politics or in the arts, we start on the backs of those who came before us. So the more we can learn how power works, how winning works. One thing you can learn from history is that most victories are not permanent. You win something, and then you have to fight to keep it.
Yeah.
We see that with the right to abortion. That's, you know, one of the things that comes to mind first now, just because that fight is so...
ongoing.
It's ongoing. It's ongoing. And you celebrate having won, and then you have to be prepared and know that this is coming. Mm-hmm. So you're not surprised by it, that you can prepare for what's going to come. And it's one way of learning. Mm-hmm. It's not the only way.
I suppose there are lessons both at the individual level for how to keep going as an individual, but also lessons for groups and mistakes they make. You were talking about sort of that the sort of one step ahead and two steps back kind of process of history, right?
Right.
But
right.
How about activist groups themselves? What do you bring into your own work with groups now that you might have learned?
Well,
from?
I'd like to say something about individuals, because I think one of the big dangers is burnout. And that inspiration is the wrong word, but I keep in mind that even Emma Goldman took several years off. The same thing with Elizabeth Gurley Flynn. She was active in the Wobblies, and then she was active in the Communist Party, but she took several years off, actually here in Portland. Mm-hmm. And then she went back to New York and got into the main throes of the movement. But there's a gentleness that I want to promote to activists, so that they take care of themselves and recognize that their emotional health, their social life, their time off is very important to sustaining their activism, as well as having a decent life.
Because in my experience, sometimes those people who are not taking care of themselves end up affecting the progress of the group that they're in by being, I don't know, unreasonable or whatever.
It can disrupt things. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So definitely that's important for the group. And of course, we need to learn and about group process and all of those things. When I came into the movement during the Vietnam War, I was young, and there were older people there. And I don't think we gave them respect, and we listened to them to a point, but I don't think we gave them enough respect for their experience. So I'm not saying that young people need to kowtow to their elders. Mm-hmm. But I am saying that they need to recognize that they don't know everything, that people who've been around for 20, 30, 40, 50 years, 60 years in the movement might have something to tell them and to tell the organization. One of the things I like best about working in the climate movement is the age diversity. Mm-hmm. I work with people in their 20s. I work with people have every age up from there, and it's wonderful.
So, and you're saying how this reflection on the past does inspire your current work in the climate change work. Is there anything in particular you draw on the past that you're sort of channeling, or as you move forward?
Wow, that's a hard question. So much of what we do is so new now. All the computers and the social media and the ways of communicating. I came from an era where we had to use snail mail, telephone trees, and that simplified the work in many ways, but it's made it less personal. So there's always gains and losses with new things. I don't know that I can answer that specifically.
Well, one thing people still emphasize, I think, is that the importance of the personal relationship building, trust building in order for groups to be effective. So I think that's something to carry forward.
Yeah. I find myself saying to people, I emailed them and I haven't heard back. And so my first response is, have you tried calling? I think there, you know, those are some things we kind of forget, that maybe not everybody looks at their email every day. And there's just definitely old-fashioned ways, getting out on the street, door knocking, tabling, those kinds of things are still useful.
And maybe they're even more powerful now that we have so little face-to-face contact. But, well, we need to wrap this up now. Thanks for answering the email that invited you to this interview. And I've been talking with Sandy Polishook, who's an oral historian and activist with 350 PDX. And this is Todd Sloan for the Old Mole Variety Hour.